And welcome to Weather and Ag and Focus on this Friday Eve, January 23rd. I want to thank everybody for joining us. Finally got some sunshine out there and light winds. A little cold with temperatures only in the single digits. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki along with our Ag Director Bridget Riedel. And Bridget, we've got a couple of special guests today. It's a full house.
We did. We filled up all the spots, which is working out quite well. So today is one of those days where we get to have our assistant ag director join us. And this month we have with us Esther Stanky. How are you, Esther?
I'm good. How are you?
Fabulous. Okay, so introduce yourself, if you would please, to the crowd.
Well, my name's Esther Stanky. I'm a freshman at NDSU, and I'm studying crop and weed science with a minor in agriculture communications. I live on a small grain farm in Hope, North Dakota, where I've grown up farming with my parents and my three older brothers. And at NDSU, I'm involved in a couple different organizations. I'm involved in Chi Alpha, which is a Christian organization, and the Agriculture Communicators of Tomorrow. So it's really, really exciting that we're getting that started up again.
Well, I think it's nice to have that organization back on campus. And good news, you're like the lead off from that organization to come join us here on WDAY for an afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
She told me earlier, she said, I'm not really sure about, you know, like broadcasting and video and stuff. And I said, oh, well, today, huh? So that'd be a challenge.
Well, welcome, Esther.
Thank you.
Welcome. Freshman, huh?
Uh-huh. She,
is it me or like, I don't know. I know what I was like when I was a freshman. She's very well spoken.
I know her parents. She's very well behaved versus what we were.
That makes sense. That would be one of the, yep.
And we'll be introducing our guest for today as well, Craig LaPlante. He'll be joining us here in a little while. And I know, Craig, maybe there'll be time that we can catch up on any of those things we did in college stories later. But Esther, you may want to step out of the room for that. Not all of our statutes of limitations have come off. So, but you said it's clear. It's sunny.
It is, yeah.
It's a little windy.
Yeah, but nothing like it has been over the last few days, so that's good news there. We've got, we've actually got some pretty halfway decent weather for today with a lot of sunshine. Wind's not overly strong out there. They're switching to the southwest, and they'll be increasing as we head towards evening. Highs today only about 10 above. Normal highs this time of the year should be right around the upper teens. Tonight will briefly drop down to about 2 above this evening and then see temperatures rising into the teens towards morning with south winds increasing about 10 to 20. And then Friday we'll see another light snow system come through here with snow developing in the afternoon. It will be breezy with west-southwest winds 10 to 25, but we'll warm up to 29 tomorrow. And that light snow will continue Friday night into Saturday morning. Very similar to our last system where we picked up about a half inch to three quarters of an inch. And then windy on Saturday, so we're going to be dealing with blowing snow and blowing dirt on Saturday as well, with highs only in the teens. And then Sunday, still breezy, but warmer with highs in the upper 20s. The good news is next week, we do warm up into the 20s and 30s for most of next week, but it also looks dry. So, I do have good news because according to the LRC, as we turn the page into February, which is
next week,
next weekend, we do start to go into the stormy part of the LRC cycle. So that, especially the first week in February, we'll have one, and we could have a couple systems roll through the northern and central plains where we've had, as when you were down in South Dakota, they've had more snow in New Orleans than they have had in Aberdeen?
Aberdeen, yeah. New Orleans, 7.5, Aberdeen, 6.7.
That's unheard of. So that will start to change. We're going into that stormy part of the LRC cycle, which is great news because we need, now I'm not seeing a whole lot of precip up in our area. I think a lot of it's going to be confined just to our south, but we'll get some much-needed precip, much-needed snowfall up here.
I will take that because on February 5th, I'm still planning for agronomy on ice, and I would really like a day. I would like a day before and a day after where we don't have to drive fish houses in there skating like an ice skating rink because that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Just so you know, you got a 20-foot ice house behind you, and you're just praying every mile of the way that nothing bad happens. So I'm okay for us you know, changing that cycle, but we just want to be cognizant of nobody wants ice anymore. We just want snow.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, and we're going to stay for the most part, even with temperatures above normal next week, 20s and 30s, that's not bad,
yeah.
You know.
So. Yeah, it's going to be very reasonable. And for this weather update, a big thank you to Equitable AgriFinance, Ryan Bonesack. He's right here in this building. He's helping farmers to restructure their balance sheet and provide working capital. He works with you as a farmer or a rancher. You can give him a call at 701-261-6529. Again, that is Ryan Bonesack, Equitable AgriFinance. So weather is one thing. There's some other headlines going on, and that's part of the reason why I have Esther with us today, is we want to talk about headlines. And so I gave her three to choose from, and then her reply to me this weekend was, but I don't have livestock on the farm. And I said, that's fine. Thursday's livestock day. We're going to talk about it anyway. So it was a learning experience, wasn't it?
It was.
Okay. So which one did you pick?
Prop 12, which All right. is really interesting.
So why don't you start with the background on Prop 12?
Yeah. So Prop 12 is a law that passed in California, which basically states that any pork sold in the state has to come from an area where pigs are stored in or housed
raised in
24 square feet, so 6 by 6, which is causing a lot of economic problems for people not just in California, but producers in Iowa as well.
Right. In fact, this was challenged all the way to the Supreme Court because in Iowa, which is the largest producer of hogs in the U.S., they're 4 times larger than any other state, Iowa had to make a number of changes, like you said, within their barns. So think about this from a farming perspective. You've got this barn and you have X amount of space in it. And now you have to expand the amount of space each hog has so they all get their private suite. And because of that, you can have less hogs in the barn. What does this do to your production? If you raising less hogs and your expenses just went up, right? What's happened to your cost of pork?
Goes way up.
Absolutely.
So it's affecting a lot of people in California too.
Right. As a consumer, what was one of those side unfortunate consequences that we've seen resulting because of it?
In California, a big part of Latino cuisine and culture is pork. Mm-hmm. And it's gone up almost 41%.
Whoa.
Which is insane when you think about it. So it's having a big economic impact on small businesses, restaurants. Yeah. So it's affecting everyone.
Now, is this just in California?
The Prop 12 is only a state law in California. It took place about a year ago. Massachusetts had something different. And I want to say theirs was called Rule 3. Then it was similar where they were focusing how hogs could be raised, but it was all coming from a different state. That's why so many challenges went to the Supreme Court on these. So what it does to on the backside of the producers is one thing, but the unintended consequences, like Esther was saying, has to do with those of us who are buying as consumers.
And this is a decision from the state legislature or the governor?
State legislature in California.
Okay.
This was a proposal that was brought in by animal activist groups because they very much want to make sure that none of us are eating animals anymore. And they pushed for a vote at the public. Well, let's think about the public in California. How many of them are actively farming?
Not right? many.
Very, yeah. very few. And so because of that, you have folks that are voting just saying, oh, but I want it better for the pig, not realizing what that's going to do on the back end.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you're a consumer in the state of California, what does this do to your budget for, you know, breakfast bacon on Sundays?
It's going to cost a lot more.
It's going to change your diet.
Yeah.
So that's part of the problem that they're seeing right now in California. Your house burned down. Your pork got expensive. I mean, things are not going well out there.
I'd like to put in my 2 cents, but
this is not a political call-in
show. I probably shouldn't, okay. So I'll just keep it shut for now.
And speaking of calling in, we always welcome that, and you can reach us here at Weather and Ag in Focus. Our phone number is 701-293-9000. Dean and I will take emails, weatherorag@flagfamily.com, and they don't just have to be from John, our regular listener. And you can be watching us on Facebook, on YouTube, and also Acres TV. If you have not yet downloaded Acres TV, you can do that today. So those are just some of the headlines that we'll talk about, a little bit of the weather, but now we're going to have a guest joining us here when we get started in our next segment, and that is Craig LaPlante. Craig, I've known as a longtime crop consultant in the region in Northwest Minnesota. I always thought that if you're going to be a crop consultant, your last name should be LaPlante. So nice work. Craig is also with the Minnesota Soil Health Coalition. So we are going to be visiting with him about a number of things regards to soil health, erosion, and so forth. Do we have a call we want to take, Dean? Okay, we're holding off on that for right now. Okay, I saw the green light blinking. And so we will take a moment to listen to the American Ag Network with Jesse Allen. And when we return after the markets, we'll bring in our guest and continue our discussion with our help today. And that is Esther. She is our assistant ag director here on WDAY. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thanks for spending this slightly chilly afternoon with us. And maybe you're doing some end of the year book work, thinking ahead about what's going to happen in 2025. Don't be afraid to reconsider your insurance, and you can talk to Nate Thorsrud, JLA Insurance in Grandin, North Dakota. He is the owner. He's a farmer, and he has deep insurance roots in North Dakota fields with experience since 2004. If you want to work with someone who is like family and trustworthy, knows what you need for crop and hail insurance, don't be afraid to reach out. Again, that is Nate Thorsrud, JLA Insurance. You can reach him at 701-371-0311. So full house today in studio. Cripes, I'm even here. So what an occasion that is. But besides having Esther with us, who is our assistant ag director today, we also have Craig LaPlante. And Craig, do you want to go ahead and just give an introduction of who you are and what you're doing these days?
Okay. Yeah, I'm Craig LaPlante. I farm up in the Crookston-Fisher, Minnesota area. And I, besides farming full-time, I also work full-time off the farm for a company out of Minneapolis called Hawkins Chemical. And my duties there is I'm an agronomic salesman setting up fertilizer distributorships and water quality ingredients to be used in the ag production across the entire state of Minnesota and two provinces in Canada.
Well, you're also on the Minnesota Soil Health Coalition.
Yeah, and I just
what
got...
What is it?
The Minnesota Soil Health Coalition is a group of volunteer members that promote soil health conference... soil health practices, and not only does soil health, but livestock and human health as well, too. So we look at all aspects of ag production, horticultural production, and try to implement these practices to preserve our fading soils and produce the best crops we can.
Fading soil. Oh, Dean, did you want to jump in on that?
Well, I was going to ask Craig, soil health has become more of an issue. What would you say, last 10 years?
In this area. But when you get out to the East Coast, it's been 40, 50 years on the East Coast because, you know, that's where our forefathers started farming and worked our ways to the West. And so that's where our degradation of soils has begun a lot harder than here.
What's the biggest advancement you think we've made over the last 10 to 20 years?
The biggest advancement, I think, is probably in the means of being able to plant crops overall, the specialized equipment that we've changed to. You know, we're using equipment that can sense our soil pressures, our soil moistures as we're seeding, and they can adjust on the go versus, and we can till into previous residues that are still there.
Way better equipment for that.
Much better equipment. Yeah. And so we're able to plant in those kind of residues or plant in standing stubbles or a growing crop and plant green and raise a crop in there. Harvesting methods have changed a lot as well, too, so we can leave more residue and then be able to plant back into it.
So there's a reason why Craig was coming in today so we could visit, and has a lot to do with erosion. And I want to touch on that, but I also know that when Esther and I were doing some prep work today, we were talking about no-till and whatnot. So you're going to get asked for some advice yet before we're done here, Craig. When I say erosion, you called me one day with an example, and this was after a windstorm in December. Mm-hmm. You want to run through that math with us?
Yeah. So we had a very severe windstorm that was right before Thanksgiving. And I was just coming back from Mankato from the Soil Health Conference. So here's just some rough estimates of what we can look at. So we can look at 1 ton of topsoil loss is the thickness of a sheet of paper. Mm-hmm. So during the day, you cannot see that when that is moving. So when we're seeing our skies are black and our roads are blocked, those are unimaginable numbers of tons that of soil are being lost. So I'm going to use an example here of Polk County. Polk County has just shy of 1 million acres of tillable land, okay? And of that, 6% of those acres are no-till. So we only no-till less than 60,000 acres in Polk County is no-till.
Yep.
Reduced tillage is 30% of our acres, so that's just shy of 300,000 acres. Intensive tillage is 42% of our land.
Oh, yes. And by intensive, we're talking about crops off. We're turning that field black.
Turning it black is an ace of spades.
Okay.
Yep. And that's 414,000 acres. We're only seeding 14% of our acres into very short-term cover crops. That's only 138,000 acres. So if I use, for example, sugar beet production in Polk County.
Which is your most economic return on an acre in Polk County.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And so there's 78,000 acres of sugar beets growing in Polk County. It's one of the largest counties, highest density of acres being farmed, which unfortunately leaves a lot of acres open for high erosion factors like we have right now. Edible beans are right alongside of it, and potatoes are as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if we look at 1 ton of topsoil lost, and we put that into cubic feet, 1 ton of soil is 1 cubic foot. So that's a box that measures 3 by 3 by 3. So, and if we put an example of $35 a yard for landscape topsoil to landscape something, just black topsoil, mm-hmm. average price is about $35 a yard. It ranges anywhere from about 15 to 55, but 35 is average. And if we put that across, say, 900,000 million acres, just one ton of topsoil that we can't see moving has an estimated value of over $35 million.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's what we see being lost. In with the NRCS, our allowable limit is, our T levels are 5 ton to the acre. Again, 5 ton is very, is hardly visible.
You can't really even see that, like you said, in the movement of it.
So 5 ton of topsoil is 5 sheets of paper, which is the thickness of an 8-pound monofilament fishing string line.
Yeah.
Yep. So you can't see that. So when we see those kind of, and we see 5 ton of soil being lost, that's $180 million in value that's being just lost. We're not regaining that anymore. So what we see in our ditches and in our tree rows and our snow banks, that's less than 10% of that soil that was lost in those wind events.
And you're just talking about wind. This is not if we have heavy rain, as exactly. You know, some would say, a gully washer.
Yep.
And what that can do for
And we can
removal.
Move even more that way.
Exactly.
And so these exposed soils, a raindrop impact moves soil tremendously. So this spring, we had some rainfall events where we had 3.5 inches of rain. 3 hours later, we were in a dust bowl. Because mm-hmm. those impact of that rain separated and segregated out those soil particles that made them into a different platelet shape now that the wind caught. So you would think 3.5 inches of rain, we shouldn't have a dust storm.
Right.
So we're going to have a lot of questions here. I know Esther has some as well. One of the things before we check with bottom of the hour news, Craig, that I wanted to ask, I will play a little bit of a devil's advocate. We have a lot of heavy soil clays in this region. And because of that, most of our sugar beets, we don't have a cover crop. We don't. We go to those black soils in order to be able to get to early planting. I don't know that this is an easy question. Can we use cover crop with that? How will that impact what we do for sugar beet production?
Actually, when we use cover crops, we can use them in a means of drying up a wet soil in the fall, in the spring, so we can get them planted earlier. We can use them as a protection source because we can plant green into those fields. So we can frost seed in November or in March and frost seed commodity cover crop into that, so when the soil's warm, they start to germinate before the seed bed is even close to being ready to be planted. So then we can plant into those and have a very secure, safe seed bed. We reduce our evapotranspiration rate, so we have a higher availability of moisture to keep germination of seed. Those cover crops also hold down on weed species, because as we reduce the amount of available nitrogen within the top inch we greatly reduce the availability of Palmer amaranth and some of these other restricted small-seeded weeds to be right. able to germinate.
Water
they're
hemp.
They're triggered by high nitrates, available nitrates.
Yes, and also any access to sunlight, et cetera.
Exactly.
Okay. All right, we're going to have lots more questions to come. It is the bottom of the hour, though. We're going to catch up with the news. And when we return, we will continue our conversation with Craig LaPlante. We'll give you an opportunity to ask some questions as well, Esther. So we'll be right back. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. And even if you're not calling, the discussion is awfully lively here in the studio. We have with us our assistant ag director today. That's Esther. She's joining us. She's a freshman at NDSU. She's from Hope. Then we also have Craig LaPlante with us. Craig is a crop consultant, a sales guy, farmer, everything from the Crookston, Minnesota neighborhood. And we're talking about soil health. So Esther, you ask Craig a question. This is what I've heard. And you guys were able to talk about it on break. So you want to bring it up now? Do you remember?
You know, I don't remember what we were talking about.
Your dad once told you.
Oh, yeah. My dad once told me that it takes about 100 years to gain back an inch of soil if you're not trying, and about 35 if you're implementing soil health practices. So can you tell us a little bit about if that's true or any other practices that'll help?
Yeah, that's actually very true. And it's probably even harder than 100 years if we do absolutely nothing. Part of the reasons when we're doing absolutely nothing and we continue on with our tillage practices that we're using, and now our tillage machines have changed a lot as well, too. So we're gone to high-speed discs, yeah. A lot of vertical discs. So we're actually crushing and compacting our soils as well, too. So we put them in a highly oxidative state. So any of the organic matter that we're trying to incorporate in those soils, we're actually setting fire to them by oxidizing them. And then that's another thing is that we only set up about 4 or 5 highly specialized bacteria that are extremely well at digesting organic residue. And they require a lot of nitrogen, and our organic residue is its nitrogen source, so we could decompose it. So it's probably 100 years or longer. But when we integrate the cover crops and we reduce the tillage greatly, introduce livestock back to those operations, we greatly enhance the amount of variability in our soils, in our bacterias, our fungi, our mycorrhizal fungal masses. Our soils decompress. We get oxygen back into those soils. We develop pore space so water infiltration can begin again. Now our plant species are not devoured by our bacteria, so we can actually start building soils back faster, and then we actually act as a wind stop, and we gain our neighbor's land that is blowing.
We have defined it as a real estate exchange.
Yes.
On some days when things are blowing around. So, you know, if you've got questions, keep them going.
Yeah. I know our family practiced a little bit of no-till here and there, and we were talking about it, and one problem we had was when we're applying fertilizers like nitrogen, potash, phosphate, when you're doing no-till, you can't work it into the ground. So how do you make it that efficient still?
Without loss, like you talked about evapotranspiration, and we can talk about nitrogen loss in a variety of ways.
So when we're looking at incorporating fertilizers into these no-till practices, you know, we've bought the no-till drills, the single-disc no-till drills.
Right.
Well, those things are $500,000 to $750,000. We didn't buy them just to seed grain with them and then stick them in the shed. They're too expensive to sit. We need to incorporate those tools of placing fertilizer as well, too. So we can put our NPKs down in our growing root zone. And by putting it down in the root zone, we can greatly reduce the amount of rates that we're applying and have very positive returns back on those crops. So the machine is dual purpose.
Right. And placement matters. And we know that if you're going to put that nitrogen on, you do have to have some coverage. But this is not an all or none game.
Right.
And I think that can be said the same. Not every field needs to be treated the same.
No, there's a lot of different tests that we can run on these fields versus the standard test that we pull now. We can run a Haney test in season and use that to determine what we need to use for in-season nitrogen applications. And that's a very good test for also for soil health. We can combine that with a phospholipid acid test, and that gives us a level of what our soils are doing microbially and how far they are alive as well, too. So we can make adjustments as far as what we use for cover crops or how we treat that soil. Then we can use a total nutrient digest test. And the total nutrient digest test is you pull a 0 to 6 and a 6 to 24. And
Wait. A 0 to 6, a 6 to 24. I know you're talking about soil probe cores.
Soil probe
okay,
cores
thank you.
In depths of inches.
Thank you. Because people yep. are like, what are you talking about?
Sorry about that.
That's okay, Craig.
But we can use those, and then that'll tell us the total number of pounds of nutrients that are in our soils. All the macronutrients and all the micronutrients, and then it also gives us carbon and nitrogen ratios, so we can use those carbon and nitrogen ratios along with the Haney test to determine what we need to be adding for nutrients, especially nitrogen, to grow that crop. And then we can run another test, which is a DNA test. So I've DNA tested all of my farm. And so I know exactly what I've got. It's over 400 different DNA species that are in my fields. So I know what pathogens I have in those fields, to what levels, to see if I need to be using any kind of seed treatments or not. So I can use those, or I can see what my beneficial populations are of nematodes or positive and negative nematodes or several other things. So there's a lot of different tests that we can use to determine what we need as fertility programs.
And, Craig, we've got Tom on line one. He's got a question for you. Tom, go ahead. What's your question for Craig today?
Yeah, so real quick. So I know a lot of the windbreaks have been eliminated due to the huge equipment that's out in the fields now. But because of this, now we have more movement in the soil. So is there any way of doing some type of a windbreak that will work with tillage equipment but still hold the dirt in place?
So, and I also want to say that not just because of equipment sizes, but when we planted a lot of those tree breaks in the 30s or after, they were not meant to be longstanding trees. You know, you look at caraganas, Chinese elms, that kind of thing. They were only going to last so many years, and they just simply have fallen apart.
Yep.
So that's a part of why they're coming out. But alternatives to that, Craig, maybe just the rye grass, et cetera?
So the alternatives are to say that we're into a corn rotation production season. So we can go in there and we can interseed into that corn while we're side dressing nitrogen on to build a cover crop in there to stabilize that soil for wind and water. We can change if we're into a wheat production or small grain production, we can use stripper headers. And then that way, we just take the kernel off. We don't have to fight the straw and the residue that creates a mat. We can leave corn strips across these fields as well, too. So we can use those as wind breaks. Four rows of corn stops a lot of wind, stops a lot of erosion every so often across the field. We could look at planting our tree rows back again and establishing them at different spacing intervals as well, too. So instead of the old Siberian elm and the green ash that we were originally planting 6 to 8 feet apart, now we plant them 30 feet apart, and then we interplant something that's a lower cover, like a red twig dogwood or something in there to take that down as well, too. So there's a lot of different options.
Excellent.
Good question, Tom. Good question.
More questions from you, Esther?
Well, I was just thinking that there's a lot of new upcoming farmers, young farmers, who maybe don't know the mistakes that were made in the past. So how can they get involved in promoting soil health for our future?
If you want to get into that, that's where our soil health coalitions come into play. Minnesota and South Dakota. Minnesota is about 3 to 4 years into it. South Dakota's is between 8 and 10 years in it. So they hold a lot of schools during the summertime where they encourage the high schools to come out, the 4-H, FFA, to come to those schools and assist them when they're doing these schools, like root pits, cover crops, irrigation, livestock rotations, many of those kind of functions. And all of those have a huge library of videos as well, too. And then there's board members. They're scattered out all over the whole state. So you could, they're easily gotten a hold of if you pull up the site, their website's Minnesota Soil Health, South Dakota Soil Health. And then you can also go in and talk to your local SWCD offices or your NRCS officers. Those are great resources to be using as well, too, along with our university personnel.
You know, really, when you think about it, there's more resources than we expect. But things have also changed probably in the last 10 years tremendously to prop us up in that position.
Mm-hmm.
So we're ready to do it.
Yep.
And that's been very, very helpful. Yep. And I think I remember it was probably about 10 years ago standing in an agronomy meeting and saying, okay, we're talking about cover crop. Is this a fad or is it here to stay? But we've actually proven that we can be using it in a responsible manner in a number of ways. I know that it's not going to work for every field. It's going to work differently, though, depending on what you're doing on your farm.
Yep, that's part of the six principles of regenerative ag is you got to look at the context of what you're looking at. What do you want to do for your farm? Where are you farming? What's your goals for your farm? These are all questions you ask yourself, whether it's in a regenerative system or a completely conventional system.
By the way, so just amongst those of us in the studio here, we can communicate. And I said, am I going to have to explain stripper head later? And so Addison actually went and found a photo of it. But Craig, for those who are listening, can you define a stripper head?
Yeah, so a stripper header is a machine that basically has two rotary combs inside that spin in opposite directions, and it just strips or pulls the seed off of the wheat head. Mm-hmm. And then the whole rest of the straw is there. So 80% of all of the harvest work is done right in the header. So instead of chugging along at 2.5-3 miles an hour, we're combining fields at 7.5 miles an hour. So our efficiency is greatly enhanced.
And we're leaving more straw.
We're leaving all the straw there. Yeah. The only thing that's laying down is where the combine had to drive.
Absolutely. It's working out much better.
So like up on my farm where I've started using it, I actually moved my seed spacing rows from 7.5 inches out to 15-inch wide. And then I look at different varieties of small grains that tiller versus being single stem or maybe one tiller. I have five or six heads.
There really is a change in what people are looking for their straw and small grains.
Yes.
And I've noticed that as a trend over the last couple of years as well.
You know, one of the big trends right now is due to economic reasons. A lot of guys are baling all of their straw off these fields. So, okay, we're doing that. But let's get back in there right away with a multi-species cover and get those fields covered. And even if it's a very short time frame and we don't get a lot of cover above ground that we see, the root systems down below are immense. We get more down below in that time of season than we do on the top side, which is much more beneficial.
When you talk about planting cover into that stubble, I get... At trade shows I am at, and I saw it again yesterday in Sioux Falls, you have all these drone operators that talk about being able to spread cover crop with their drones. Would you do that with a drone, or would you much prefer to see that done by ground?
Much better by ground.
Just better coverage.
Better coverage. The placement is there. You know, some of those seeds require higher levels of moisture to be able to germinate.
Yeah.
At least when we're in the ground, it takes very little moisture to germinate a seed.
Yep.
So our result of having it drilled in is much, much higher than having it droned in over the surface.
And there's a bigger variety of what we can be using for cover crop than we've ever had before, too.
The other thing is to look at with cover crop is when we seed a cover crop into, say, heavy corn residue, we change the microclimate inside of that corn crop. So we elevate humidity levels, we change the bacterial counts, we change the insect species, we change the wildlife that may be there. It degrades the corn stalks much faster with cover crop than it does with tillage.
Yes.
And so we might as well let Mother Nature do the work versus spending money on iron and time and fuel and breaking soil up to blow again.
Maybe she has deeper pockets, Craig.
Yes, she does. And she always wins.
Every single time. I say that often. So, Craig, thank you for coming in today. What are the places where people can go to find more information? Who should they be in contact with?
So... Some of the people we should be talking to initially is start with your SWCD office, your Soil and Water Conservation Districts. Mm-hmm. They're our first line of defense, I'll call it.
Yeah.
And then we move into our NRCS offices, National Conservation Reserve Services offices. And then we can go in from there. There's a lot of different programs that are in there. So there's EQIP dollars, there's CREP dollars, then we get into the different departments of ag, like Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, departments of ag. And if you get signed into there, they have a lot of grant dollars that are available. Like my farm is now a Minnesota certified clean water farm.
I've seen that through Minnesota, and it's also advertised in Minnesota Soybean Council.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So see your councils as well. Minnesota wheat growers, the barley growers, soybean growers, corn growers. Go see all of them, because a lot of those have a lot of those resources to direct you to other forms of funding as well. Another one that's a really good resource to help with funding is the Soil and Water Outcome Fund. Mm-hmm. And that is growing very rapidly in the last 3 years, and very easy and very workable.
You know, before we came on today, Esther and I were having lunch, and she said, scholarships. It's amazing how many scholarships I know about now that weren't there.
Mm-hmm.
I think Craig just talked about scholarships for your farm.
Yep. The EQIP program.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we've talked about that a lot on our farm.
Yeah.
Yep.
So these are good spots.
Yes.
Thank you again, Craig. We appreciate it.
Absolutely.
All right, folks. We have a last little bit on headlines. We're going to wrap up the weather, and we will do that when we return.
And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. We got a few minutes left. If you have any questions, shoot us a call, 701-293-9000. I'll do a quick recap of weather. We've got temperatures outside right now in the single digits, where it's 7 degrees here. A little cooler in Lakes Country, 3 above. Northern Valley temperatures between about 5 and 10. Out to our west, temperatures already in the teens. And we're going to see that warmer weather come our way as we head into the overnight. That's right. We'll see after a high right around 10, we'll briefly dip down to about 2 above this evening, then see temperatures rise into the teens as we head towards sunrise. South winds will increase 10 to 20, and a minor clipper system will move to our north and then push through the area on Friday. That will give us a little bit of light snow, but warmer weather as well, with highs right around 29. And that light snow will continue Friday night into Saturday morning. Not looking at a lot, a half inch to about 3/4 of an inch, kind of similar to what we had yesterday. But when you factor in the strong north winds that will develop on Saturday, it's going to lead to more blowing and drifting of the snow, with highs only in the teens on Saturday, and then breezy on Sunday with west winds giving us warmer weather in the 20s, and then we're in the 20s and 30s for all of next week. Next week looks mild, it looks quiet, and unfortunately no precip next week, but as we said, the LRC is going to flip the switch, it looks like, as we head into the first week of November. Sorry, February. I'm going backwards here. Wait a minute.
Do you miss turkey?
Yeah, I guess so.
Just curious.
First week in February, we will start to see a few more storms come through, not only the northern, but central plains. The whole central part of the country here really needs some moisture. Nebraska, South Dakota, North Dakota, southern Minnesota, we really need the moisture, and it looks like finally we're going to start seeing a few more storms move through the area for the first part of February.
Well, if it's not storming in Nebraska, there is an internship program that you might want to put your eye on. It's not hosted by the Duttons. It's hosted by the Downing Ranch, and it's called the Sand Hills Ranch Internship Program. So Esther and I read up on this. If you ever wanted to grow up to be a cowboy, this was your chance.
Yeah.
What were some of the highlights of that internship program?
It's a really, really cool opportunity to go somewhere you haven't been before. The Sand Hills is very different topography.
Very ecologically diverse.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful.
We're talking about a 3-month internship program on a working ranch. Mm-hmm. These are students that, you know, it sounds like I might be doing a lot of fencing, but it is fully taking care of habitat, the animals themselves. Some of the majors that were taking internships there were?
Yeah, there's pre-vet, agronomy even, ranch land management. And they really pointed out that it's not just for them, it's for anyone who's interested.
Absolutely. So. And they were taking those skills back out to use elsewhere. But when you hear vet majors saying, well, there's no working facility, so we've got to rope them and work them. That's an experience that an internship really makes priceless. Yeah. So if you're interested in that, they are looking at students who are 19 years old or older. Actually, you can be a non-student, veterans. And some of the funding is coming from the Nebraska Environmental Trust as well as National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, because they work to look at the whole ecological system with the ranch, managing that with the wildlife and so much more. So,
were you down there, Esther?
I was not.
No? Sandhill cranes are a sight to see.
Wow.
Out in the sandhills there, too. So, well, I want to thank everybody for joining us. Esther, thank you so much.
Of course. Thanks
much
for
appreciated.
Having me.
Craig, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hope everybody has a wonderful, wonderful rest of the afternoon. Don't go anywhere. The Jay Thomas Show is coming up next.